The latest economic numbers look all mixed up.
This is Jerry Tuma Smart Money, a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services with Cornerstone President and Founder, Jerry Tuma. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member, FINRA, and SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. We are here to talk about your finances, investments, and the economy, and we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.
Welcome to Smart Money with Jerry Tuma. This is Michael Williams. And I will say, last week we mentioned that we were hoping to have Matthew Ike on the radio this week to interview, and some stuff kind of came up where it wasn't just going to happen this week, so we're hoping to have that for you next week. But Jerry, you know, in the recent shows, we've been talking about our economic outlook for the most of this year,
right,
versus it's now changed a little. So from our newsletter, which is on our website, cornerstonereport.com, you can see election blues, where our outlook was more recessionary, like it was more imminent that it was going to occur. But in the last few weeks, especially after the election, we've had a slightly different take on the economy.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about that, but there's been some kind of mixed up numbers recently.
Probably more than slightly changed, I would say, at least over time. And you know, at first it's like, well, this is kind of confusing. I was not anticipating a Trump,
right,
let's call it a landslide. It wasn't technically a landslide, but in my mind it was. You know, what was it? Kamala only won the states that had no voter ID laws. That could have something to do with it. But anyway.
But in the recent week or so, some more numbers have come out.
Yeah.
They're kind of mixed up to us on how it's been.
This is I'm going to read something from Investec Hotlines. This has been the most confusing business cycle than in my memory, and I've been doing this since 1980. And I've studied a lot of economic history going back to the 40s and even the 30s. And I would say, of everything I've ever seen, this is still the most mixed up, you know, cycle I've ever seen. It's like driving up to a traffic light and red, yellow, and green lights are all flashing simultaneously, alternating and simultaneous. So in other words, they're constantly moving. But is it green? Is it red? Is it yellow? I don't know. And the answer is all of the above.
Right.
And that's really what's happening here. Normally, if you're going to have a soft landing, which is what now looks like the predominant view, and that's pretty well where I think we're shifting to, is a soft landing kind of environment. And I've been pretty adamantly bearish, you know, in terms of the economy, not necessarily always the market, for the last 12 months. Because, again, if you look back at our newsletter, which is on the website, Election Blues, it shows once the unemployment rate keeps going, it continues to rise. And that's still an issue today. So is that a red light or is that a yellow light? I think it's a yellow light. The stock market definitely is a green light. But just listen to this report. The reports that I'm reading from Investec Headlines. James Stack is one of the more highly respected newsletter analyst type guys out in the marketplace. And here's some things that happened. Well, number one big change, manufacturing was up 1.9 percentage points in November after the election. So manufacturing had been one of the leading indicators going down,
right,
or coincident going down.
For a while.
It's been happening for months. And usually, so again, you have, again, envision your train. You have the caboose at the end, which is unemployment rate. You have the engine, which is the leading indicators of economics. And then you have the cars in the middle, which are divided between coincident indicators and the current economy. And manufacturing being negative was definitely a negative for the economy. Now, manufacturing sentiment's up 1.9%. But contrary to that, the services sector, which has been the sector that's been strong for the Institute of Supply Management, fell 3.9%.
So they flipped on us.
They flipped.
Yeah.
So what was leading is now, what was going down is now going up again, and what was leading and going up is now going down, and 3.9 percentage points is meaningful. The question he asks is this a one-month anomaly or the beginning of a more sustained weakness yet to be seen? And the answer is, we'll find out. We'll see. You're going to have to watch it and see. Job openings. Job openings, if you look at the payroll report, had a really strong gains. The job openings on the payroll report were... Payroll report, which again is large corporations, had a good reading. Payrolls expanded by 227,000 above the consensus of 214,000. So, and again, that's from Ned Davis. So payrolls, large companies improved. They continue to add more jobs. But oops, the job openings for the Bureau of Labor Statistics showed a 5% increase, but the unemployment situation, unemployment rose 4.2% to 4.2. So there was an uptick in retail sales, trade sales lost jobs last month, which is small companies, which is almost 70% of the economy. Therefore, the unemployment rate went back up again. So it had ticked down from 4.3 to 4.1. Now it's back up to 4.2. So the trend had been that the smaller companies peaked out and now it's starting to look more positive. Now they're going back up again. The unemployment rate there. So what happens after January, after Christmas sales? Could be interesting with the small companies, because small companies, again, are the backbone of American economy. The big payroll report companies are not the backbone. They're important. They're the big gorillas in many ways, but they're not the backbone because, again, small companies, vary between, I've seen estimates anywhere from 68 to 76% of the overall economy, depending on when you're tracking. Consumer sentiment from the University of Michigan was up for the fifth consecutive month. So they're saying, hey, current conditions have improved. We're up for the fifth consecutive month. But future expectations fell 5.3%. That's exactly backward to what it's been all year.
Yep.
So every one of these statistics has flip-flopped. The ones that were going up are now going down. The ones that were going down are now going up. So what are you seeing? Red light or yellow light or green light? And the answer is yes. All of them are that way. In the meantime, the market is at historic highs. The market is also at historic valuations. I'm going to read real briefly from Ned Davis research, and that's become, I would say, out of the three we take, bank credit analyst, Alpine Macro, and Ned Davis, and we also subscribe to a lot of smaller services. Davis has been the most correct in this business cycle. He said macro sentiment, and this is Ned Davis Sr., who founded Ned Davis Research back in the 70s, and his famous book is Being Right or Making Money, and he's correct on that. It's a great book. It's technical, but it's a very good book. I recommend it strongly. Get it on the internet if you're into the market a little bit more. Macro sentiment closer to top readings. Now, he goes on to say consumer sentiment is rising. We still have a healthy level of skepticism, and margin debt has not hit all-time highs the way you want it to. In other words, When you hit the point of absolute maximum optimism, as John Templeton talked about, then the ratio of margin debt is usually at the top. And that's one of the things we have noticed in the last several months, even though the market's very expensive, if you look at it on a valuations basis, price to book value, price to earnings ratio, and all that, we've talked about it's in the 96th or higher percentile of all market readings. And some of that I think you contribute to a little bit of a change. And, 50 years ago, we had a lot of manufacturing. Today, we don't have much. Now, we got more service and tech jobs. And I can see that means that you can justify a little bit higher price-earning ratio based on the type of economy you are today, but you still have to watch for the extremes. And you're still, the main thing you're watching for is the point of maximum optimism. Well, basically, on Ned Davis's readings, he says macro sentiments are closer to top readings, but he didn't say hitting all-time highs. So some of those readings, like the one missing ingredient, I think, on the market this year has been margin debt. Normally, margin debt will hit an all-time high, and it's all-time high, what we would call in economics, an absolute level, meaning it's higher than it's ever been. But if you compare margin debt and its percentage growth to the actual market, it doesn't look as extreme as it has in previous tops. So all it means is we're probably a little closer to a top, but not at the top. Latest readings, 95% of the companies reporting. We've had 75% of beat earnings per share. We had a 5.8% growth rate for the stocks that reported of the S&P 500. And that's a good, healthy growth rate. That's not extravagant. It's not over the top. Mm-hmm. It's not negative. It's certainly not a recession. But seven out of the 11 sectors of the S&P 500 had year-over-year growth. Four of them had declines. Now, if that is a prevalent trend, then, if you go from four of them declining to five of them declining, you know how that works. The dominoes are going to start to fall. And analysts, the perpetual optimist, analysts, again, look at stocks from the bottom up. They don't look at big picture macro like I do. And they're projecting huge, they were projecting this quarter, third quarter and fourth quarter, to have 16-17% a year earnings growth. Well, it came in at 5.8. Well, 5.8 is solid,
right?
But it's not spectacular. But the perpetual optimist of the analysts now are still projecting Q1 12.7% growth, Q2 12.1%. Q4, 17% growth. So they're still projecting straight line extrapolating up on the earnings. And we know how this historically works, to coin John Templeton's phrase. When you reach the point of maximum optimism, which I'm backing off and saying I don't think we've quite hit that yet. When you do hit that point of maximum optimism, then the readings, they're straight line extrapolating up. The arrow is going straight up and the market bends and turns. So what I think we've got to watch for right now is the proverbial black swan. Right now, it looks like the Fed is, they've obviously topped out in rates. They're going to be pulling rates down. I think interest rates are going to come out down a lot slower than anybody anticipated. I don't think they're going to go as low as everybody anticipated. And here's one of the questions. What is the side effect of this? The side effect of not having a recession, if we end up in a true soft landing, and went back and relooked at the Bolio Brothers material this week, their latest material, Bolio Brothers, on their ITR, their report, they're still showing housing is deeply in a recession. They think banks have come out of the recession, and every other sector of the market is one phase or another of what looks like it's going to be a soft landing. So they said about a year ago that they thought that we would have some sectors of the market that actually went into recession, some sectors of the economy that went into recession, some sectors of the economy that went into soft landing. Right now, that looks the way it is. The proverbial issue is black swan. Well, we have another black swan. Those tend to happen after Fed rate hikes. So when the Fed gets to the point where they say, we're done hiking rates, we've tightened money as high as we're going to go, we've made it difficult. And by the way, M2 money supply has bottomed and has now turned back up again. That's another reason to look at this a little more optimistically, that this might end up being a soft landing. The proverbial black swan is what you got to watch out for. And by definition, Taleb, in his book on black swan, said you can't predict a black swan. It's something that's unpredictable. And so I'm still have one eye on the exit in that regard, that right now we're fully optimistic and fully involved and fully invested, even though we're not buy and hold type strategist. Right now, the Santa Claus rally is real. I don't expect it's going to end. The question is when this current cycle, this current rally will end. If I were giving you educated guess, I would say we might have a peak in this around the inauguration. The excitement and the fervor of the hopes and anticipations of what Trump is going to do. And I think over the four-year cycle, I think that's optimistic. The optimism there is probably true. The battle, we're going to have an interview with David McCord in just a moment and talk about some of the noise, some of the obstacles, some of the hurdles that Trump may have to jump over, which could be meaningful and significant over the next several months. So we're probably going from an all-up market, which we had quite a bit of volatility. We've had more corrections in a single year than I can ever remember without having a true bear market. And in my memory, that goes back to 1980 in terms of the marketplace, my experience in the market. But I think that right now we're changing our view. Temporarily, I've always said on this show, I reserve the right to change my opinion later. We've changed our view at this point to a soft landing. But if you compare this, the most recent soft landing we had was in 1994. In 1994, we had cleansed the market through a recession. We had Saddam's invasion of Kuwait just a few years before that. We had the savings and loan debacle, and they had to bail out the savings and loans to $500 billion bailout. So we'd just been through a fairly deep economic cleansing. Then we started going back into growth, and Greenspan left interest rates low. We'd been through all that, plus the dot-com bust. Greenspan left interest rates low for a prolonged period of time, probably too long, which is usually what the Fed does. Then he raised it, I want to say, 12 times in 1994. So he raised it back up to, quote, normalization, normal rates. He didn't go to extreme tight money. As he raised those rates up, though, what had happened was the economy had been through a big cleansing. The market had been through a big cleansing. And that set the stage for five consecutive years of double-digit growth in the S&P 500. 5 years where the S&P made over 20% a year for five consecutive years without a true bear market. We had a shakeout with long-term capital management in 1998 that was almost 20%. And then the market just continued to run, and we had the top of the dot-com bubble mania. So we had a huge five-year run after that. The question that I have, because as we like to quote Yogi Berra from time to time, and as you know, he's the one that said deja vu all over again, and you know, nobody goes there anymore, and talking about restaurants, it's too crowded, talking about his Yankee buddies, and the bottom line, Hall of Fame catcher for the Yankees, when they ask his son Dale, are you like your dad, he said, no, our similarities are different. Anyway, so there are a lot of similarities between 94, but there are a whole lot of differences. Main differences I would point out is we were early in an economic recycle, and you could say that in that we had a mild, almost recession 3 years ago. We had the COVID recession in 2000. Point is real simple. Stocks in 1994 were not grossly overvalued, and they're borderline that right now. As we pointed out in a recent report, recent radio show, anywhere from the 96th to 100 percentile in terms of valuation expense. So we're in extremely expensive territory for the market, and we've just gone through a Fed tightening phase, which is now over. Normally, the market doesn't have a big crash when the Fed's raising rates. It normally has a big crash after the Fed's done raising rates because, again, there's a lag time in how that affects the economy, and somebody out there has been doing crazy things with other people's money, and that's usually what starts the crash. So I think you should keep one eye on that. By definition, if it's a true black swan, because Michael used to teach statistics at Texas Tech, and so to get perfectly accurate for Michael's benefit, a black swan is an unknowable unknown. Like Donald Rumsfeld said, nobody knows where it's going to come from. It's totally unknowable. And so the issue is, or you could say tail risk, which again is a little bit different, but that tail, those are things that are outside the norm that you just don't expect, that happen very rarely. But when they do, they have an outsized effect on anything. I think it makes sense to keep one eye on that. One eye on potential for exit, depending on your strategy, if you're a long-term buy and holder or not, which I think there are fewer and fewer long-term buy and hold people in the world now, because we've never been buy and hold. But the bottom line is, watch that unemployment rate. The thing I would keep my eye on right now is the unemployment rate. If it continues creeping up, I have a problem. I think we have a problem right now. Ned Davis, and I trust Ned Davis Sr.'s writing this, the founder of his company, he said macro sentiment is closer to tops, and he's talking about major tops, not intermediate tops. He's talking about a major top in the market, like the top of the bull market. He said it's closer to the top readings, but maybe not high enough. We'll watch that and see. So let's do this. Let's talk to David McCord. He has a lot to say about the political environment and risks in that regard for next year, not necessarily during the Santa Claus rally. Well, given how late we are in the getting close to end of the year in terms of the market and the calendar year, I wanted to talk to David McCord. Now, we've had a little bit of a shift in, for those of you who don't know, in our corporate structure. I've moved to the chairman role. I'm now 69 years old, but still extremely active, and all of my male ancestors typically lived until and were real active to their late 80s. The women lived until their mid to late 90s. That's pretty amazing. So I got a lot of longevity and good health on my side. But at the same time, things do change a little bit when you're 69 years old. So we're moving David McCord, who's been with us since 1991, into the position of president of the company. He's going to be in charge of the chief on the market strategies and the money managers we use on the markets and things like that. And, of course, many of our longtime clients know David. He's been with us since 1991. Chartered market technician, which is a very specific designation that deals with market patterns and technical analysis and all that stuff. So, David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jerry.
I want to start off with really what's going on in the political realm. We do want to touch on the Middle East. We want to talk about tariffs. And they're, obviously, the market's had a really good run for the last 2 years. And it's going to have, and it looks like to me, the Santa Claus rally is going to continue through the end of the month and on into January. And for most of you that are not familiar with the seasonal patterns, usually, most years, not all years, usually November, December are two of the best years of the entire year. And it looks like it's going to happen again here. But as we enter into the new year for next year, the market, so right now the market is really not going to care about what happens between, you know, starting next year for the most part. It's going to be going, hey, let's hit our numbers. Let's get our bonuses. Let's push performance to the nth degree all the way out until the 31st of December. Then in January, normally speaking, and as you know, everything is subject to change, but I would say normally speaking, there's a reassessment phase that happens in January. And so sometimes the market goes up in January. Sometimes it goes up for the first week in January. It's 3 weeks in January. I wonder if it runs until the inauguration, given the exuberance that's still there in the marketplace over Trump's win. And so the issue is we don't know that, but I want to look a little further down the road. I want to take a look at next year, at 2025 and the prospects. Because as we had a pretty good discussion, David was just talking off the top of his head as he was driving, and I was discussing this with him last night when I was prepping for the radio show. There's a lot of uncertainties and risks that are, I think, are more real risks for 2025 that the market is ignoring right now, and the market will continue to ignore through the end of the month and maybe for the first week or two of the next year. I would not be surprised if we have a peak of some sort. One of our analysts said he thought we would have peak first around when Trump won, and then secondly during the inauguration. I think that makes a lot of sense from an emotional standpoint. Right now the market is starting to get very overvalued again in terms of the short run. Exuberance is could be pushing too high before that usually happens right before the correction. So most of our analysts are saying, hey, enjoy it while it lasts, but watch out for, you know, this is setting up a short-term overvaluation situation at the least. And we do want to talk about possible black swans for next year, but let's start out with the elections. I know because, David, with the appointees and all that stuff, the cabinet, I think, what do you have, a two-seat House in the majority in the House, two-seat majority in the House, but we're losing three to the cabinet, so we'll have special elections. It's kind of a mixed bag. It's kind of like, you know, putting dirt at the bottom of the pail, and you got clear water at the top, and all of a sudden somebody comes in with their hand just stirs the whole thing up. There's a lot of mixed bag of stuff that could go on. Give us a comment, first of all, about the political realm right now, what you see happening with the House, the Senate, Trump getting in, how true, you know, it could be a tough transition, smooth transition. Give us some insight.
Well, I think the first thing is, as far as the market cares about, you know, it, like you said, it's celebrating the fact that they're hoping that the deregulatory push that, you know, Trump has clearly made a priority is going to, you know, be very growth positive for the economy and for, you know, for companies. So I think that's what the market has been celebrating, first of all. But, you know, then the reality comes, you know, the rubber hits the road when you get Congress in there to act, what is the legislation that's going to be pushed out there? And when you only have initially at least a two-seat majority in the House, hopefully they'll, you know, those are from safe House districts, the people that were pulled into the cabinet.
There's three more that are pulled in the cabinet, so it could be a five-seat majority, but right now it's only a two-seat.
Right. That'll have to wait until the special elections happen, and that'll be sometime early next year. So, and there may be some differences from
that
one state
be, what,
to the
February
next.
February or March,
so
even.
We could, so, yeah, it could be a month, you know, a couple months before you have the fully constituted
little
House.
Little muddy water there.
And I mean, that is right on the line. It's right on the line. So will they be able to just, you know, rubber stamp everything that he wants? I'm skeptical of that, especially since even though you have a six-seat majority in the Senate and you do have J.D. Vance to be the tiebreaker like Kamala was the last round, you know, there are a number of those Republicans. What exactly the number is depends on the issue, but they like to be typically, you know, viewed as moderate and quite often vote on the Democrat side of issues. So it's not, you know, it's better than the House slim majority, but not by a lot.
So, it's not a true slam dunk that whatever, it's not going to be a rubber stamp on whatever Trump wants, is what you're saying.
No, and I think you're seeing that now with some of the cabinet appointee proposals, you know, where there's a lot of pushback on certain things. And you know, some of that comes down to the fact that, you know, the shackles are off Trump. He doesn't need to worry about reelection. He just has to worry about his legacy and what he wants to do.
Right.
And so he was fairly unrestrained in his, you know, some of his picks were viewed as being controversial or have, you know, issues, which at this point he's not too worried about. He's still trying to push for some of those without getting into the weeds on that. Just it's there and he's already, you know, they're out there trying to convince people that, you know, hey, his picks are good. But I think this is what you're going to see in terms of some of the legislation. He won't have everybody on board, despite the fact that, you know, even in a lot of those districts, he might have won by a good margin. But nevertheless, some of those senators, even in those states where he, you know, take Joni Ernst from Iowa, for example. Trump won that state by, you know, well into double digits. And she has, you know, been clear that she's not just going to rubber stamp all of his appointees or his ideas. So, nevertheless, politics is, you know, a game in progress. People mm-hmm. negotiate for things just like Trump does. He always, you know, makes his views, you know, very well known and, you know, out there. And then, you know, he'll change tack when he needs to. And that's not really always a market positive thing either, yeah. as we've seen, because as you were asking me right before we, you know, came live on the air, is he going to come in with tariffs on day one or not? Who knows? Who knows if he decides to play good cop or
bad cop?
He kind
of likes the uncertainty, doesn't he?
So, you know, will he do something? Well, he is doing something. He's out there, you know, using the power of the press and his megaphone and making his opinions known. Hey, I want to see this or else. And so when Inauguration Day comes, I guess then we'll see what the or else is or if they've done enough to make right. him happy for the moment.
And who knows what the or else could be. He is, if nothing else, he's unpredictable at times. You mentioned the tariffs. Do you think he's going to start out with tariffs right off the bat as soon as he gets in? Or because that's one thing he doesn't have to worry about approval from the Congress about. So he could come out and just be a Muhammad Ali, or I guess George Foreman's a better analogy. Pam, trying to knock the guy out as soon as he gets there, or he could soft pedal it and try to get it in a little more easy. I don't know. He seems more confrontational. What's your viewpoint on when he will tackle? Yeah. We know he's going to tackle the tariffs. We don't know how severe they're going to be. We know that Mexico and Canada are already begging at his knees practically to, let's play ball with you. What's your view on the tariff situation?
I think he will do something. The question is, what will that be? Will it be towards the, you know, severe side that has been threatened? Or will it be more toward the moderate side, which is what my guess is where he'll go? So kind of paint the worst case scenario, get people moving his direction, mm-hmm. like we've seen from Mexico on the immigration issues, the, you know, caravan issues. They've already shut down two. There's a third one that's starting now, which they're saying, hey, we're not going to let that happen. So I think he's talked tough enough on the front end that mm-hmm. they're saying, okay, well, we'll comply.
Because we realize you mean what you say, and you're going to do it.
Immigration is just one issue. Trade
right.
is another issue. So the Chinese, of course, are, you know, they have a foothold in Mexico. And so, you know, when there's a factory that doesn't say, oh, this is Chinese, you know, what is the ownership? So there's lots of gray areas like that. We've seen Trudeau in Canada also, you know, trying to be somewhat more conciliatory and saying, you know, please don't basically do these tariffs. And Trump, of course, trolling him and jokingly saying, well, you can be the 51st state, you know, and then you can be the governor and we'll take care of the big stuff. So he definitely is happy to stir things up, and there's plenty of that.
So we could have a lot of uncertainty for 60 or maybe even 90 days with the very slim majority he's got in the House already. As you understood and explained before the show, the three appointees, if they make it in confirmation, they're taking out of his majority in the House of Representatives. So tariffs are the only thing he knows he can control for sure. I'm like, I don't know. It's going to be very interesting, and it could be a lot of market volatility in the meantime. You know, we've had record run this year for an election year, one of the best ever, I think. As appointees in the cabinets, do you have any concerns, comments, anything that stick out to you about his cabinet appointees?
You know, I really don't think there's, I mean, there's plenty of stuff we could probably talk about. But I think the main thing is they're going to do what Trump wants them to do primarily. So his first criteria, I think, on most of these picks was, are they people who I can trust? Mm-hmm. You know, we had issues the first round with people who he appointed that, you know, wanted to remain somewhat more independent than mm-hmm. he would like. So I think that's at the top of his list. And, you know, he's going to find people that are going to, you know, be on the same page with what he wants to do. So
it could be kind of interesting to see what happens politically. We know we've got another debt limit, the continuous fiasco that happens every so often, where they have to extend the debt limit, or we're going to default on our paper, and then the Treasury has to do all sorts of weird things to fund the government payouts for Social Security and all that stuff. In my view, that's just kind of a distraction. It's kind of like a red herring. It's maybe it'll get a lot of press in the short run, because it always does. Because if you're in the press, you know this is really important, because the government could go bankrupt if they don't extend the debt limit. Well, come on, people, this is just stupid. They're always going to extend the debt limit. There's no limitation there. But you have more issues with, again, the tariffs, I think, are going to be a big deal for the Trump administration. We don't know if he's going to be heavy-handed, if he's going to be immediate. He's definitely got China targeted in the crosshairs. We'll see. But he's already gotten concessions from Mexico and Canada before he's even inaugurated. So it could be, this is going to be an interesting, you know, administration no matter what. If you look at the bigger picture potential problems instead of the noise, and if you're not familiar with statistics, noise in statistical term means irrelevant factors that happen, but they capture a lot of attention, especially in the media, because no offense to people in the media, but they mostly want one journalist in Fortune once. We did this in their tape series years ago on investing. He said, I, mea culpa, he said, you know, I have to admit, I'm a Fortune writer. I write for a living to an investment firm, investment magazine. He said, but most of our time in the journalists, in the media, we focus on what ends up at the end of the day being statistical noise. In other words, high headlines, high emotional pitch all the time. It's the end of the world many times. But at the end of the day, they're irrelevant in the bigger scheme of things.
Before we go to David, let me remind you that to learn more about us, you can go to cornerstonereport.com. That's cornerstonereport.com. Not only can you learn about us, you can find our recent newsletter Jerry's been referring to, Election Blues, and you can see how we've kind of changed our mind since then, and you can catch up on previous radio shows if you missed one. So again, that's at cornerstonereport.com. If you'd like a free consultation, please reach out to us at 1-800-327-4285. That's 800-327-4285. So I really like it when we bring David on here. It's not his favorite thing to do is be on radio, but I like to get him on here because
we have to get him out of his introvert side. He has an introvert and an extrovert side, but David is one of the sharpest analysts I know. He's been with us since 1991, and as I mentioned in the intro to it, he's now the president of our company, and I'm the chairman. I plan on being here as long as my body stays alive, but at the same time, age is creeping up, and it is inevitable, and I'm 69 now. So I'm hopeful to be really active in this into my 80s, like most of my ancestors. But anyway, it's time to pass the baton to David in terms of the running of the day-to-day company. Let's talk to David McCord. What is your take about, and I know Russia and Trump have kind of played patsy cake a few times before. They've not been ardent enemies like you might think they might be. What's your take on how Trump's going to approach the Middle East?
Well, I think that is the biggest change going in with the new Congress is the free flow of both, especially money, but weapons as well to Ukraine is not going to be there with the new Congress. So that's one change that's not.
And that,
not
if,
Trump
if they
only.
Don't support Ukraine, and Europe has already been minuscule in terms of how much money they spend on defense anyway, what happens?
Well, the Russians are kind of on the ropes a little bit. You know, this has been a huge war of attrition on both sides. And so lots of people lost, lots of money down the drain. I mean, billions upon billions of dollars for both the sides of it, if you will. And that's not sustainable long term. So I think Putin is hopeful that there will be a resolution that will let him keep some territory.
Negotiated settlement.
A negotiated settlement of some sort, exactly. And we've just seen this week, which of course these things kind of, you know, dovetail together a little bit, because the Russians have always been a big part of supporting the regime in Syria, and now they're starting to back off of that. So that, you know,
now, is that a concession to Trump?
I don't think so. I think it's just partly an issue of, you know, everything that you do in the world costs money. And so he's much more focused on his attention, and his efforts are closer to home with Ukraine. Okay. And then
so it's a matter of, you know, less money and
some
debris
of the power. Okay. And that's my initial guess. I'm not a political analyst, really, but that is kind of what it looks like from here.
And then what about the big challenge, which is really Iran and Iran's ongoing skirmishes through proxies at this point mostly, but also missile lobbying with Israel? What's going on there, and what do you think Trump's impact will be?
Well, I think that's one of the areas where we've also seen a little bit of, I don't think they would classified as weakness themselves, but they see Trump and they're like, we don't necessarily want any of that. So they've, in the meantime, in the short term at least, have quieted down. Now, will it continue to be an issue? Of course. But at the present moment, at least, they don't seem inclined to try to cause a big mess before he gets in. But I think because they know the hammer's going to come down.
They're messing with the mean dog.
He's, you know,
at that point.
At the beginning, that's not a very good tactical play, most likely.
No, it's not. And, you know, of course, everything that I've seen, and I haven't done a lot of research on this, points to Iran as a possible instigator of the attempt at assassination of Trump. So that probably didn't play real well with him and his family. Like, okay, so our arch enemy is deciding anyway. We'll see what happens there. Now, so you've got critical points that affect the world. You know, Iran could affect the Straits of Hormuz, oil. I'm guessing, kind of like you, they're going to soft pedal everything at this point because they realize that the big gorilla with 800-pound stick is right there, and Trump is not afraid to use it, and he probably won't attack their nuclear facilities. Israel might, but at the same time, they're reluctant to because they don't want to start a big conflagration, I'm guessing. Do you have any further comments on the Israel versus Iran situation as it currently stands?
I just think Israel has been very efficient and very effective in, you know, wiping out a lot of the immediate threat from, you know, Hamas and Hezbollah. And so, you know, the Iranians are not going to go away as a long-term threat. But in the meantime, it's all what makes sense at the moment. You know, you got to pick your battles and pick your time of when you want to fight it. I just don't. I think they're deciding that right now is not the time to escalate when they've got
would make sense
Trump in the bullpen, just ready to
pounce, you know, at any time.
Get somebody,
and he
they,
could, and
they know
he
he's going to go after somebody. And
when he says he's going to, he's going to. And he's kind of got that reputation, unlike other people we've had in office up there. So, well, David, thanks. Any other final comments about risks for next year as it pertains? You know, we got oil, we got gold, we got the stock market. Stock market's at record levels of valuation and record highs. Any other comments about how all of this interplays with the market next year? Or the
I just think it comes down to expectations versus what actually happens. So the market is very optimistic that we're going to have this wave of deregulation that's going to free up additional profits on the corporate side, which of course plays into, you know, those earnings are reflected or help support a market that is, like you said, on the expensive side already. But do those things actually come into place? And to kind of answer your prior question a little bit in terms of the cabinet, at Treasury, as Scott Bessent, who's a hedge fund, you know, extremely experienced guy, the markets like that, so they're not concerned that there's some untested, controversial pick in there. So I think the markets are very comfortable with that. And at Commerce, Howard Lutnick, who's also a Wall Street, you know, fighter type guy. So another guy, you know, how that plays out into economic policy, trade policy in particular, and how that, you know, how that interaction with China and with Europe, for that matter, which is having major issues of its own. The Germans in particular, who have always been the economic powerhouse of Europe, are, you know, sliding in a very bad way. So there's a lot of potential for turmoil. And of course, going back to the noise side of things that you mentioned with the press, you know, Trump likes to make noise, and sometimes he uses it to shake things up and then see how they settle and hopefully move things his direction over time. So that is the risk, I think, in general for the markets, is are they going to get exactly what they want? Probably not. So to what degree does that become a problem? We don't know until we get there. And, you know, there's, it's amazing to me that the market has been able to so far shake off all of the geopolitical stuff for how long now? I mean, it seems like forever that we've had.
At some point in time, you wonder if that's going to be a problem.
So for now, I guess the market has decided, well, you know, who, what, me worry? Well, eventually, eventually we may get to that moment. But
one last question, since we're on geopolitics anyway, speak to a second what you, your perception between Trump and China, Xi Jinping. You know, China obviously wants to dominate their sphere of influence or bigger. They're having their own problems with a big housing bubble that blew up, and they've got a lot of domestic economic problems. Any comments on the Xi Jinping-Trump relationship and what that might mean?
Yeah, I don't think that Trump is really hardcore anti-China. He just wants fair trade policies. He would like there to be a world in which we can figure out how to make things work for both sides. Now, the question of always comes down to is, can there be an agreement on that without, you know, is there going to be the carrot or the stick? We know he's out here with the tariff stick all the time. And I'm sure, you know, all of these things have trade-offs. So whether he says, hey, this is what we'll do, and we want you to change these geopolitical policies in terms of your influence on these countries or this region or whatever, you know, a lot of that stuff happens. You know, we see, again, we see all of the noise in the press of whatever's being talked about, and then a lot of the other stuff happens on the quiet back channel calls that we don't hear about until everybody writes a book after that administration is closed, is gone. But
and he's a master negotiator, and you know, well, that's his background.
You know, he didn't get everything he wanted the first time. You know, will he be able to be a little bit more convincing based on the fact that his election was more convincing? Will that turn into more of a political mandate once we get, you know, again, into the legislation? Once he's in office, he's going to try to, you know, move things along. Definitely seems to have momentum in the interim, but can he keep that going? And
the tariff stick is probably his biggest weapon.
You know, he's got the energy, and we're going to see it.
Oh, yeah. All right. And David, thanks for your comments.
All right. Well, I would like to take one more little reminder for you that you can go to our website, cornerstonereport.com. That's cornerstonereport.com. There you can learn about Cornerstone Financial Services. You can find previous radio shows if you missed one or would like to recommend to somebody that go listen to it. And you can catch our latest special reports that Jerry has posted. Again, that's at cornerstonereport.com. For a free consultation, please call us at 1-800-327-4285. It's 1-800-327-4285. Well, again, like I mentioned before we started the interview with David, it's always good to get him on here. I get the pleasure of talking to him every day and getting his thoughts, but I think it's good for the listeners to be able to hear his thoughts because he's got a lot of good information. He does so much research. It's unreal. But now that we've heard from David, I am curious with you, again, we started the show with kind of these, the economic numbers recently have been kind of all mixed up. If we're going to have this soft landing, what do you think you need to see?
And they're totally mixed up. And as I use the analogy in the first half, it's kind of like pulling up to a stoplight and the red, yellow, and green lights are alternating flashing while you're sitting there. And so, okay, and as we mentioned, I won't go into the details what we talked about in the first half, but the fact that manufacturing has bounced and the service sector is had a huge flip-flop. Everything is flip-flopped in the numbers, and we're going to need to see another month or two of the numbers. This is the most bizarre economic cycle that I ever remember. And again, we're going to have to watch two things that right now we don't know. The hurricane and the Boeing strike affected the numbers on things like the leading index economic indicators. Again, the unemployment rate, good jobs report on the payroll, unemployment rate ticked up. Small businesses, they're like, wait, more uncertainty. Who's going to get laid off after Christmas? We know nothing's going to happen before Christmas. Nobody's going to lay people off. You would be a heartless, blood-sucking vampire to lay off your staff before Christmas. But some companies are clearly missing their numbers. It's just not the big dogs, and the big dogs are the ones that are dominating this market. Mm-hmm. So what we all have to look for, and I'm not now sure that we've hit that, is what John Templeton coined the point of maximum optimism. He said in every cycle, there's a point of maximum optimism where everybody is universally bullish, and I think we're close, and I think that's what Ned Davis said in his recent report that we quoted in the first half. Ned Davis Sr. wrote this one, macro sentiment closer to top readings, but then he came back and said, yes, but we're not quite at the top based on his numbers, but he's watching for that. Mm-hmm. So the thing about it is, the most recent soft landing, again, was in 1994. If I remember right, Greenspan raised rates 12 times. The market had big up and downs all year long, finished flat for the year. But that launched us into the longest running bull market in terms of productivity without major declines. What I consider the best bull market of my lifetime, which was 1995 to 2000. Now we're sitting here with grossly overvalued stocks in many areas and analysts projecting to the moon. Is that going to birth another 5 years of 20% plus on the S&P? I'm skeptical. Not unless there's some kind of intervention in the middle. And historically speaking, again, the leaders of the last stock market generally are not the leaders of the next bull market. And so one or two things are going to happen. The Netflix, you know, the FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, either they're going to go into all-time highs that are just dot-com-ish in terms of their valuations, meaning they don't just keep going up, they just skyrocket. They double from here, which to me is just mind-boggling to think of. Or there's going to be a shift of leadership at some point in the near future. So I would anticipate that shift of leadership would be extremely volatile. It's hard for me to envision not having a recession with where we've been because the Fed has done unprecedented things. All of the precursors of a recession have happened, but this could be the exception. Right now, I'm leaning more toward a soft landing than I was 2 months ago, obviously, before the election. And I think that the Trump optimism and deregulation and all the things that Wall Street's celebrating right now probably will end up causing a soft recession or soft landing in the economy. And if you're not familiar with how soft landing works, it's real simple. You can envision, you know, the airplane, you know, I just flew back from Nashville. The guy's coming down and all of a sudden he's going too fast before he gets to landing and he crashes on the runway. That's not a soft landing. A soft landing is you barely touch down and you are able to park the plane. And in this case, a soft landing in the economy means not a recession, but a near recession. So what we're looking for is, are we going to be able to crash the plane on the runway, which is a recession? Are they going to have a soft landing? And they mean, oh, we just get in there just right, pull into the gate, no problems. Or do we, like, you know, I see some of these things on Facebook where some of these pilots in other countries around the world that may not be as astute as our pilots, and they have big problems with their landing. So we'll see. But anyway, the bottom line is, the Christmas rally, the Santa rally, looks real. It looks like it's going to continue. I would not expect any significant downturn in the economy and the market until at least January. And then it's going to be interesting to see because, again, every January, the reassessment phase starts. Right now, nobody cares about what's going to happen next year. They care about hitting their numbers by the end of the year and riding the fastest horse to the finish line. And then after that, they begin to reassess things. And so January could be interesting. Frequently, you have a recession, or not a recession, but rather a correction in February because the reassessment phase starts. So sometimes the ebullience and the emotion of December flows on into January. One analyst, he caught my opinion. I may be repeating what I said in the first half of the show, but he said, He thought we'd have a short-term peak in the market around the election and another short-term peak in the market, which could be the peak for this cycle around the inauguration. It's going to be very interesting to see. So may you live in interesting times. I keep repeating myself, but I've never seen a market where all of the things, when you're dealing with the acceleration of the unemployment rate, and going back to 1948, every time it's reached a certain acceleration point, you've had a recession, and that doesn't happen. Like, okay, beware of the exceptions that might end up being what happens. So I've kind of shifted my view a little more optimistic based on the not only the Trump victory, but the magnitude of the victory. But I'm also going to have one eye out for some unexpected black swan. And those normally do not, and again, if you're not familiar with that terminology, something that affects everything. It has cataclysmic worldwide event impact on the economy and the markets, but it's completely coming out of the blue, a total shock. Those are normally what cause bear markets, but they normally historically happen shortly after the Fed stops raising rates. So we have a danger window to go through, I think, in the first 90 days of the year. And if we don't start a bear market during that time, then maybe we'll go, hey, this is going to be like the late 90s and just continue to be a perpetual bull market. But I'm skeptical on that one. I just think that right now I'm still bullish.
We'll keep you updated on our views every week. We'll see you next week.
Jerry Tuma Smart Money is a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services of Dallas, Texas. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Financial advisors at Cornerstone could help you if you prefer to delegate your investment decisions to a financial professional. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA, SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. We publish a newsletter, Cornerstone Report, which is available on our website or by calling our toll-free number at 800-327-4285. That's also the number to call for more information about anything we've discussed during today's broadcast. For more information, visit our website at cornerstonereport.com. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only. It should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. Remember, we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.